What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We're at the 15th Annual Sports Medicine Update, hosted by Memorial Hermann and UT Health. I want to thank Bob Marley for letting us come out again, do all these interviews. Ryan has been on the podcast multiple times, helped out with some of the interviews last year as we did this. So, Ryan, you talked about returning the injured shoulder to the weight room, and you're about to lead a breakout session, so this may be a real quick interview, but tell me briefly, what was your topic?
So, what I was trying to hit on was the kind of the next step, the next phase in shoulder rehab. A lot of times after individuals, athletes, recreationalists come in for shoulder rehab, they kind of leave having good strength, good mobility, but they have those next levels of strength and aspirations to return to their sports again. So my talk was kind of hitting on some of the exercises, some of the issues that can limit their full return to full capacity. Working on performance improvements and things like that, and trying to tie it into eventually returning to a sport or just getting back into hitting the gym.
All right, so you said some of your feedback is that you've gotten is seeing the exercises perform. But why do you think that we as athletic trainers most of the time would rather see you perform or have you show us the exercises than teach you how or why to do them?
Well, I think it depends. If you're somebody who's going to look further into exercises and you have aspirations to, dig deep into the realm of strength and conditioning, you can come up with these exercises. That's kind of what I did. As trainers, you guys are kind of that intermediate step between a rehab and a full strengthening conditioning program. So a lot of times, the feedback I get is, hey, show me demonstrations, exercises that kind of I can use in the training room, because you may not have access to the full gym. And so what I try and do is give you guys examples of things that you can do with minimal equipment but still address the major deficits, the major limitations, the major muscle groups that needed that work, need that next step in strengthening to return to their strength and conditioning program with the team that they're going to go back to.
Okay, the three exercise videos that you showed were along those same lines. Why don't you tell me what those were?
One of them was the tall kneeling landmine press. And what's good about it is that you get into it. I'm sorry, half kneeling landmine press. Is you get them in a half kneeling position, which is basically one knee on the ground, 1 foot front. And you load up a bar, the landmine, you load up a bar. And what you're doing is you're really pressing more into a 120 degree, more of an elevated position rather than like a flat bench press or an incline press. You also have them without support of a bench, so you recruit the shoulder force couple muscles really well. You get the upward rotation of the serratus because you're pressing into a ideal position. You get the mechanics of moving the shoulder blade on the rib cage, which is real important for all pressing motions, retraction motions. So it's a good way to kind of get all those areas hitting at the same time. The external rotation and overhead press is something Mike Reinold posted. He's a big shoulder guy. It's one exercise that I've found that really hits the posterior cuff, the rotator cuff muscles. A lot of times the guys who are performing it really get that kind of metabolic burn that you feel, getting that kind of that pump feel, but it really kind of helps fatigue out those muscles, which is important because you want your rotator cuff kicking in when you're doing things overhead. So it's a good exercise to really work on alignment. And then the last one was a kettlebell overhead press. When you turn the kettlebell upside down, really makes your grip and your rotator cuff have to really work. The harder you have to squeeze, the more radiation you get to really tighten up that shoulder. And so with that kettlebell overhead press, it's less weight, so you're not trying to overhead press a lot of weight too soon, but the instability of the kettlebell requires a lot of those muscles to kick in a little bit harder, so it's a good way to make sure everything's recruiting well.
All right, so for me, 35-year-old father of three boys, mm-hmm. right, how important are these exercises, or how beneficial would it be for me to use these in my regular workout?
Well, I think they're a great transition to just overall health. As we get older, we slowly creep away from those dynamic activities that we got to perform when we were younger. And so we may lose our ability to really get overhead without compensatory motions. And if you have aspirations and goals to be strong and stay strong and avoid injury, the best thing you can do is to make sure all those muscles get their work and they get worked in the optimal positions. These exercises are safe as long as you do them appropriately and you have proper mechanics. And I think the good thing about them is they easily transfer over to somebody who's learning how to do them, because they're not all that complicated. And if you don't feel like you're doing it right or you can't do it, it either means you need to work on it or you have some sort of other deficiencies that you need to address. So somebody who's 18 all the way to 35 and then older, as long as it's something that you need programmed, if you want to play sports and you want to shoot baskets and you don't want to worry about a recurring shoulder injury creeping back up on you as you get older, then maintaining that strength is important. So yeah, for sure, keep going.
All right, and one of the things I heard you say in the talk was if you're doing like a rowing motion or doing the push-up, whenever I feel my shoulder blades pinch together, that's when I should stop, because I shouldn't set the scapula and then do the rowing motion. Because when I was doing, like during college, my days, I remember the physical therapist specifically saying I want them to set the scapula, and then, so basically making a row like a four-part motion, like set the scapula, you pull back, you release, you go forward, and then you fully release the scapula. So explain that a little bit further.
Well, I think, and I was a tech, and I went through PT school, and even coming out, that was a popular cue, was to set your shoulder blades back and down, pitch, right? Pull back and down together, and I think what was trying to be accomplished was you're trying to get that lower trap recruitment to help set the shoulder blade in a good position. Anytime your lower traps turn on, you kind of open up that subacromial space, so you allow for more motion to occur without impingement. But what goes on whenever you actually move during a movement, an exercise, or even some sort of dynamic activity, is that they move in coordination with each other, they move in concert. So there's not an independent movement followed by an independent movement. And so what you really have to try and cue someone who's either relearning or has a little to no experience is that you want those shoulder blade muscles to act with the glenohumeral muscles so that you keep that glenohumeral position in line with the humerus. So if that scapula is moving, then you want that socket and that ball to be able to move together. It also helps with joint centration, which is important for your rotator cuff to keep that in line. So importance is the cueing it correctly. So a push-up, as you drop down towards the floor, if your shoulder blades are actively retracting back as you drop, you're keeping everything in good alignment versus going all the way down and letting your elbows go way past your body. You can get a lot of anterior stress with a row, standing, bent over, inverted, whichever. Moving your shoulder blades on your rib cage at the same time, whenever you feel your shoulder blades can't move any further, don't finish the motion by just extending with your humerus, because you're going to get that stress to the front. Work on thoracic mobility if you don't feel like you got a lot of range, but really move through the shoulder blades, so therefore you're working the shoulder blade muscles. And hopefully that carries over to the strength whenever you perform it dynamically.
All right, so do you feel that there is a place for cueing single muscles like we were just discussing? Maybe in like just post-surgery, you're retraining that one muscle, but if you're teaching strength or dynamic movement, then that's when you need to work on the entire motion. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, so I mean, isolated work definitely has its purpose. The talk that I put out there was definitely focused more on the I'm after rehab, I'm back into decent strength, but I want to go into the next level of strength and strength and conditioning camps and get back with the team. So initially, right after surgery, yeah, muscle shut off. And we know that with the knee, with the quad, but also somebody who's just had bad mechanics their whole life, they may not know how to actively retract the proper muscle. So getting them to turn on the lower trap a little bit more. But as you mentioned, as they get further and further out from that initial injury, getting them to do it in concert and coordinate a movement.
All right, so Ryan Collins and Paige, do you have a social media yet? You got on Twitter?
No, I'm not on Twitter. No, I know.
I tell everybody you're older if you're not on Twitter. All right, so hit up Ryan. We'll probably talk to him again later. We're probably be in private interview. So go do your breakout session, and I'm going to come catch up with you in a second.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right, this is Jeremy Jackson, Sports Medicine Broadcast. Dr. Josh Yellen has been running most of the show for me. This interview will be sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/RyanCollins2016, or for those people who, my son actually corrected me the other day, it's 2016, Daddy. So it's Ryan Collins 2016 at the end of sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. So that way you can find this interview once it's released again, and we'll have the interview or the actual session as well. So those will be released separately. Again, we're at the Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine update, thanks to Bob Marley and the whole Memorial Hermann team. And thanks Jasmine Dozoff for doing all this recording work, and Nicole Kasha for doing all the work in the other room.
So while we have a little break, you know, I wanted to put Nicole Kasha on the hot seat. She just graduated with a Master of Athletic Training degree from the University of Houston.
Congratulations.
Right?
That's true.
You have a you have a piece of paper now, right?
I do. I actually received it yesterday.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm going to frame it.
And so you took your Board of Certification exam,
mm-hmm.
and you accepted a residency program position
yes.
at Ben Hogan Sports Medicine.
Correct.
And so you have a lot of people that are going to be listening to this broadcast that are probably thinking, you know, maybe I'm an undergraduate, or maybe I'm in AT school now, and I want to go for a residency program. I want you to discuss a little bit about your experience. Why did you choose to pursue a residency program? What do you hope to get out of it? What has the process been like so far? How great the MAT program at the University of Houston was? How amazing your program director was? I mean, from what I understand, this guy's like incredible. All your experiences leading up to this point. So let's start from going back in time.
Very beginning.
Huh?
The very, very beginning.
Yeah, I remember, let's start from the beginning.
I actually remember doing the very, when Jeremy came to our like round table classroom, and it was his first time with us, and he was talking about what we wanted to do, and I was speaking, and I was interested in NBA, like women's NBA basketball then, and now I'm like a completely different route. So the past 2 years during the program, I've kind of like figured out what I don't want, what I do want, gone back and forth a lot. So the opportunities that were given to us during the program helped me make those decisions. So even I would go after things that I knew I didn't like, but I wanted to make sure that I didn't like them, so I still tried them anyways. Like high school, I know I didn't want to do that, and then college, I know I didn't want to do that, but I still gave it an opportunity. I still worked for the college football team and went to the PT clinic. I did like OR. I was in the operating room a few times. Mm-hmm. So all the opportunities that were given through us throughout the past 2 years helped me make the decision now
for
the residency.
So you got to experience the entire spectrum of what athletic training is now, right? And so at some point you decide that, you know what, I want to pursue this residency program. Why?
I had no idea even residency programs existed for athletic trainers until like a few months ago. I think it was like November. And whenever I found out about them, I thought it was a great opportunity for us, especially coming right out, being an independent clinician or independent healthcare professional. How ready are you? And that's something that the residency program can help you figure out. And also it depends on the type of residency program that you're going after, because there are many different kinds. The one I'm a part of is biomechanic based. So they have motion capture cameras there, and we'll be doing motion analysis.
And so why, and by the way, the director up there, I think he does just an outstanding job. I think he's great. Craig, if you're listening to this, you know, he's doing great, right? And there are all sorts of different types of residency programs. Forrest Petra, who he was at the Stedman Clinic, and then he went and he started up the Emory residency program.
More physician-based.
And then he's over at, I think it's St. Joseph's in Idaho. He's been great. And so tell the audience, tell the listeners, why were you interested in this one? Because what they need to understand is, I think the thought process is like there's one residency program, there's one type,
mm-hmm.
right? But there's there's all these different. So why was this program interesting to you?
So the residency program over at Texas Health Ben Hogan Center, they do a lot of work with the baseball athletes, and they work with those who are post-op ACL, and they do preventative research. So whenever I was this past year with my mentor, Haji May. He kind of showed me and helped me, like helped me open my eyes to the importance of biomechanics and treatment in rehab, in prevention. So I figured if I could learn as much as I can about biomechanics, I'll be able to help treat an athlete or anybody, any sort of, I guess, athlete or those who are active patients. I can help treat them and understand the body and its mechanics and injuries a lot better. So I knew I wanted a more like depth knowledge base on it, so that whenever I go and I am an independent clinician, I have a better background on that specifically. So, and I knew that they would provide that there for me over at the residency.
And so for those that are interested in, you know, maybe they're finishing up AT school, maybe they're thinking about a residency program, tell everybody that's listening the process that you went through to get to this position, because I think that you were, what, 2 of 100 people selected, right?
Yeah, there's over 100 people that applied throughout the entire country. So it was a lot of networking, a lot of communicating, a lot of putting my name out there, being involved. I would go to symposiums and I would go to different conventions and just get to know everybody who's part of that team at Texas Health Ben Hogan, and also those who Texas Health Ben Hogan associate themselves with. So I knew a lot of people that were really close to Craig, and I would communicate with them, let them know, look, this is what I'm interested in, this is what I know. Not only can Texas Health Ben Hogan provide me with a lot of information and knowledge, but I can help them out and I can bring some of my knowledge that I've learned. So I can, not only are they going to do something for me, but I can also do something for them.
And so you're really talking about when you were in school, you took advantage of every opportunity, not just the opportunities that the program provided, but other opportunities that you sought out for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you were totally 100% invested in where you're going and the path and the success that you want to be able to create for yourself. So you chose Ben Hogan. When do you start?
August 8th.
And so you have to move. You are born and raised in Houston?
No.
Or you were born?
I was pretty much raised in Houston, but I was born in another state, Wyoming.
Okay. So you're raised in Houston, and you've lived in Houston. You went to undergraduate in Houston, mm-hmm. and then you got your master's degree in Houston, and now you're going to move out of Houston.
Correct.
Right? And you're going to go up to Dallas.
Yep.
And so you are going to go up to Dallas, and you start in August, and do they have a prescribed rotation for you, or what are some of the things that you're going to be doing?
So one major thing is we have to propose our own research project that we're going to work throughout the entire 12 months. So we can choose whichever team, because they work directly with TCU. They have an association there. So we can choose whichever sport that we want to focus on. I'm going to be doing baseball because that's what I'm most familiar and comfortable with. And then with that, we're conducting our own research that we present at the end of the year, which I just went to the ones of the two current AT residents who are there. I just saw them present about a month ago because Texas Health and Memorial Hermann actually worked together, and they shared like a research day where they shared information. So throughout the entire 12 months, we work on this project, and at the very end of the year, we present it.
And that presentation, it's like a case study.
Yeah.
Have you ever presented a case study before?
I sure have.
How about that?
Yeah, but this is a little more intensive because we're having like 500 subjects.
I get it, but you've already done it and you've already seen it. Okay, so it's a one-year residency program. Mm-hmm. And what's your goal after that?
So I'm hoping to perhaps pursue a PhD. Mm-hmm. It depends what I learn, what I can get from the program, but currently I was looking at PhD programs in applied neurodynamics because that's kind of goes hand in hand with biomechanics, and there's a lot of connections there. So if the residency goes well, and depending on what I decide to do my research project on, what I decide to do for my biomechanical analysis, if it goes well, then I'll hopefully pursue that PhD.
Mm-hmm. So you said that you're going to be working closely with TCU.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and they're a baseball team?
Yes.
And TCU has an accredited athletic training program. And their program director is Dr. Stephanie Jevis. And Dr. Jevis got her PhD at the University of Houston. So when you get up to TCU, let her know that you are a kook and so is she.
Okay. And yeah, I didn't know that.
Well, now you know, right? This is all about connections and bridging and making sure that, you know, it's that quote, I think it's by Thomas Edison, if I'm able to see farther, it's because I stand on the shoulders of giants. And so, Nicole, you are at the top now, and your job is to stay at the top and keep pulling people up with you, right? And go find those people that are going to be able to help you and make those bridges and make those connections and keep climbing so that one day, right, you can come back. And I'm sure it will be Dr. Kasha, and we'll be sitting and we'll be listening to Dr. Kasha disseminate knowledge upon us. It's going to be incredible. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I didn't realize how close of a community athletic training was, but it's actually really easy to network within the athletic training community. It's, everyone knows everyone.
And that's another great learning lesson for everybody listening, right? Especially the students that are going through AT school now. Everybody is connected to everybody else. So what you do in one clinical education assignment and the impression you make will have some sort of carryover to everything else you do. And it's up to you to decide on whether you're going to make a good impression or a bad impression. And that will continue to follow you through. And whatever result comes out of that will impact your, you know, ascension or descension through the program or through the profession.
That's true.
All right. Congratulations. If somebody had questions for you, Nicole, you like it, they're going to listen to this and it's like, I want to go into a residency program. I want to learn more about it. And I've got my eyes set on, you know, the Ben Hogan Clinic. How would somebody get in touch with you if they had questions?
So email, and I have a LinkedIn that I always check every day and I keep updated. So you can find me on LinkedIn or my email, which is my last name, Kasha, C-A-S-C-I-A, and then my first name, Nicole, N-I-C-O-L-E, at gmail.com. Very easy.
Thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you.
This is exciting. Make us proud. Okay. Bye.